One of the greatest stories ever told was told on this program. How long ago was it, God? You know, I don't even remember now. About a hole in the ground that had no end, or no end that anybody could find. It was a damnedest story you ever heard in your whole life. Anybody remember Mel's Hole? Well, guess who I've got on the line, I think. Mel. Mel, is it you?
It is him.
I can't believe it, Mel.
Yes, indeed.
Listen, brother, I just spent an hour red-faced, embarrassed, because I thought the Blair Witch Project was real. And I really thought it was real, Mel. I really thought it was real. I mean, I've still got the hook in my mouth here. And so I guess the first question I ought to ask you is, how long ago, Mel, did we do the shows that we did?
Oh, gosh, this must have been about, I'm going to say, 97?
97. Well, it was one of the greatest stories, no doubt, ever told. In fact, it spurred all kinds of things. Television crews went up to Ellensburg, Washington.
I know it. I heard many things, and
so I must begin by asking you, before I go forward any further with you tonight at all, Mel, is Mel's Hole, the story of Mel's Hole, another Blair Witch Project?
I will not drop any bombshells on you in regards to this being the Blair Witch Project. This is not the Blair Witch Project.
Real as a heart.
My life. This is my property. I may end up telling you things that will maybe... I haven't seen the Blair Witch Project. I don't know anything about that, but I will say that I can tell you some pretty scary things.
I know you can. But all right, so anyway, I just wanted to get that out of the way
right
here at the beginning before my face goes...
No, this is not that.
All right, well, back in 97, I forget, did I get like a fax from you?
I sent you a fax way back then.
Is that how it began?
And basically, I was just curious about this hole on my property. You know, and I knew with your big audience that somebody might be able to return some information to me. You know, I tried to do a little research on the depth of various holes and so forth, and mines and all of those sort of things. And all right. And so I was basically picking your audience's brain is what I was doing at the time.
Well, we were picking yours. It's the damnedest story I ever heard. Let's, radio, you have time. Let's tell a lot of the audience, you know, would not have been around then and would not have ever heard this story. And I've never heard one like it in my life. So, if you would...
Sure. I'll recap...
Especially after all these years, it'll be good to see if your story now fits your story then.
Okay, well, sure. Well, basically, this all started. I sent artifacts, and, you know, I had this property. Well, we're going to get into that later on. But
you owned the property at the time, right?
Yeah, it was actually my wife's property. But,
okay, was
yeah.
it was it empty property ostensibly?
No, we had a some outbuildings on there, a couple of trailers. It was really unimproved land, but while I could, I was living there, and mm-hmm. it was really I left the property.
Okay, so you lived in a trailer on the property?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And then there was another trailer or two on the property at the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, there were several outbuildings out there, and I had basically was doing a lot of research in various Indian herbal medicine and so forth. I grew
yeah,
various.
I remember
things
that.
There.
I remember that.
And that was my thing. I used to spend a lot of time going to Nevada, dealing with the various bands of Indians down there because they're. The herbs that they use are the ones that I've been researching, and we might talk a little bit about that, too, at some point.
Sure.
In time because I think you might find that interesting as well.
All right. Now, the location of this is near Ellensburg.
It's on the Monastash Ridge, which is a little bit south of Ellensburg, but it's the prominent mountains surrounding the Ellensburg area there. Ellensburg is a little town basically in the center of Washington State,
right
off of I-90.
Right.
And it's a nice little place.
But yeah, I hear you. How long had you been living there?
Oh, we'd been there for several years.
Several years.
I'd married this woman in Ellensburg, and you know, we lived there for a while, and then we kind of got broken up.
Well, at the time that you faxed me, you simply said, I don't even remember the facts now, but you said there was a hole on your property.
Yeah.
Into which, I guess for years, people had been dumping stuff.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things I didn't tell you about, one of the things that regularly was dumped in the hole, was a little Mexican fellow used to come around about once a week.
Yeah.
With like a big steak bed truck full of tires that he used to dump in there, and the guy used to pick them up at
tires.
The various used tire places, and I guess, you know, it costs money to dispose of tires, right?
Oh, well, I guess. Oh, yeah, it does, because they have these big yards where they have these tire fires by mistake.
Well, I don't know. He'd pick them up from, you know, wherever had them, you know, if they were too bald to be used as retreads or whatever. This guy, little Mexican guy, would pick them up and bring them over, and he must have dumped, like, thousands and thousands of
tires.
Tires.
Now, let's describe the hole. Was the hole just a hole in the ground, or was it a well?
Well, if you looked at it, you know, if you were walking up to it, you'd say, "Huh, this is kind of interesting looking." Well, what it was is about 9 feet across.
9 feet across.
And there was stonework around it, and I don't know when the stonework got put into it, but it was sort of.
It was round then.
Yes, it was. It was perfectly round.
And you're saying it was not 9 feet in diameter.
The diameter of it was 9 feet, and
wow.
What I did is I built a metal cover for the top, so. When it wasn't being used as a garbage disposal, for lack of a better term, it was covered up because I didn't want any problems. You know, people falling into it, kids falling into it, whatever. You know, I was.
Oh yeah, you'd be charged with some kind of crime or something.
Well, yeah. I'm beginning to wonder now if they would have ever been heard from again if it had gone into it.
But, I don't think so. You just hear a scream disappearing.
Yeah, just kind of going on into infinity. But I'd written to you, and I said I've basically let like 80,000 feet worth of monofilament fishing line. You know, the
But there's even more before that. I mean, you said that people were throwing like dead cows. In
oh
there.
Yeah, the cows. I used to love, one of my favorite things to chuck in there was like television tubes. Man, I'd throw television tubes, the picture tube down there, and
it was big enough so you could drop it. In other words, the whole. I take it, for as far as one could see or hear, went straight down. It must have.
If I would hold something over, like, towards the center of the hole, I couldn't go all the way to the center because, you know, going by 9 feet across, that's more than 4 feet, 4.5 feet across. But
sure.
If I held something out, like, the size of a picture tube, you know, 19-inch picture tube from an old TV set and dropped that in there, I would never hear it hit anything. It would just fall.
And fall and fall and fall.
And that's what made me curious, is that how come, you know, I mean, you know, I didn't hear a splash.
No crash.
No crashing, no, you know, I mean, I could hear something if I didn't get things like dead center there, you know, and if it spun and...
If it would hit the sides, yeah.
But then eventually that sound would give up too, so, you know.
By the way, going back, do you have any idea what this hole originally was? Was it anything? Was it something... that anybody dug, do you think? Was it something that was naturally always there, or what do you think it was?
As far as I can determine, and you know, everyone that I had spoken with said that hole has always been associated with that property. One person that I talked to says, well, as far as we know, the hole there, you know, and your property has been there as long as the whalebone has been in the tree out there in Ellensburg. Ellensburg is a strange place. We've got a tree out in Ellensburg.
Yes.
In someone's yard.
Yes.
And there's a whalebone jaw growing out of the tree.
What?
Yeah, the jaw of a whalebone, and it's like embedded in the tree.
Are you telling me the truth?
Yeah, you can go to. Yeah, in fact, I was familiar with it because I used to walk the neighborhoods there and see it. You could see the tree, but you could actually go to the Yakima Herald newspaper.
Yeah.
And you could see a picture of it.
How? Look, that's Central Washington.
Yes.
That's not the ocean.
Yes. No. The ocean is a good. The Puget Sound's a good 90 miles away.
90 miles.
Yes.
So how could there be a whalebone growing out of a tree?
There you go. There you go. But the whalebone's been there like for 100 years. You know, and people tell me they, you know, the ones I've talked to as well, your hole's been there as long as, I mean, Ellensburg doesn't go back much further than, I'd say 150
years. 150
years. You know, so I mean, that, you know, was a town, you know.
So that hole was probably there long before.
Way before that, and other people held the property, and, you know, I don't know at what point did, you know, the rockery get built around it, but it's kind of nice. You know, it looks nice.
So you're telling me like thousands of tires, refrigerators, even dead cows.
Dead animals, dead dogs, you know, whatever.
It's like you didn't have to burn trash.
Oh, no. You know, we're kind of ecologically sensible people there, so we don't really generate a lot of garbage or trash or anything. But, yes, we did put our household trash in there if we didn't use it for compost or things like that, you know, if we got, you know, some...
Right.
So we threw a lot of stuff in there.
So after years and years, you finally got, and I understand, incredibly curious about how deep this damn thing really was.
It was just one of those moments that, you know, all of a sudden you say, good grief, I got to get to the bottom of this, right? So to speak.
And, unintended,
And so I used to, when I lived in California, I used to do, a lot of shark fishing, and so I had some of those big old, you know, reel type fishing poles, and so, you know, the first thing I did was empty, it could have been about 1,200 yards of fishing line down there. Cause this
what
was
did you do? Did you take a rod, or, I mean, how did you lower
it? Well, yeah, the first adventure that I had with this, and this was kind of... before the obsession began with finding out more about this, is that I basically sent down into the hole from, you know, just my big, you know, shark fishing pole, a fishing weight, and next to the fishing weight, I also had a roll of lifesavers.
Lifesavers.
And the reason I had the lifesavers at the end is that if I hit water. This old shark fisherman's trick. If I hit water, the lifesavers would melt.
Well, sure.
Yeah. See, we used to do that when we go fishing.
Yeah, in other words, it would be so far down that anything else you would put down there, would obviously be dry by the time you got it back up again.
Yeah. So, you know, I just, you know, emptied the fishing pole, and then, you know, when it got to the end of the line, I just let it sit there for a while, and you know, it takes a little while for a roll of lifesavers to melt, but... That's how it would determine that it was wet down. You know, if it was wet down there, they hit water.
So, how much initial line did you have on that first?
It must. You know, I'm going. You know, through trying to remember what these, you know, big pen reels held, but there was like it must have been about 1,200 yards on there.
1,200 yards.
1,200 yards. So that would have been about 3,600 feet at least. That was the first expedition into the hole.
So you let it all the way out?
That's right.
Could you feel at any point like the weight? Of course, I suppose at some point when you've got that much line reeled out, you've got weight, period. But could you still sense the weight at the end of that line as you
roll it? Oh, yeah. You, at that distance, you can actually move the line. You could, you know, you can move it, you know, laterally, side to side. But it was kind of an effort. You can actually, if you could actually get a swing to it, but it was really hard. I mean, you think about that. You know, you're trying to swing something that's 3,600 feet. You know, it's difficult. You know.
And as you let it down, you didn't feel any turns or twists or
No twist, no obstruction. The basically, I let the line go down freely with the weight on. I had a 1 pound fishing weight at the end of this line, and basically it went down and down and down and down and down on. You know, it's at the same pace basically. That's at that point there when I got the line. You know, when I got all the line up there, I looked at my
lights. You must have been scratching your head saying, how many feet was that again?
About 30. That was 3,600.
3,600 feet.
Yeah.
I guess there are holes that go down 3,600 feet. I'm not an expert on holes, but.
That's a little bit more than half a mile, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I guess there are holes that maybe go that deep down.
That's right.
But that is where the story continues. So hold on, Mel. This is Mel of Mel's Hole, back in the U.S. from Australia. But then again, that's another story entirely. You're just beginning to hear this one. So, with a fishing reel, originally, down 3,600 feet, no bottom. But that is not the end of this story. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
So you think you're Romeo,
after the program we did with Mel, and the one we're doing now, I found out quickly that there was an abiding, gigantic fascination for this kind of thing. I mean, people, I guess, I don't know exactly what the fascination is. Frankly, I really don't know. All I know is I had thousands of emails and faxes from people wanting to know about this hole and telling me, in fact, about other holes. Mel's Hole is not the only deep mystery hole in the world, Mel. There are others, and people have told me about them, but yours is quite spectacular, to be sure. But there's some fascination, and you must have felt it when you got down 3,600 feet. You must have been saying to yourself, what the hell?
Well, yeah, at that point there, it became kind of a quest to find out how far this will go down. So I went, basically when it hit 3,600 feet and came up with dry Lifesaver candies.
Right.
I said, well, I'm going to need more fishing line than this. And so basically I, let out the 3,600 feet, let another 3,600 feet in from a similar reel. So down at that point to 36, that's 7,200 feet.
So you're down over, you're like a mile and a half down.
Over a mile at that point there. And I was still going, it was still going down. You know, at that point there, the line is still going down. I'm going down.
Now, a number of people said after that first show that after a while, the weight on the end of the line would be insignificant with reference to the weight of the line itself.
Yes, and in fact, I recall that, and I was curious about it myself. And the best I could do is, and I wasn't going to bring up all the line I had let down at the point that we talked about this.
Yeah,
last.
You'd be cranking.
I would want to get like a some sort of motor driven winch at that point to deal with that. I didn't want or deal with that. But anyway, I did is just attached looped it around. One of those spring fisherman scales, the kind that you, put in your tackle box there and, kind of try to get a weight on that thing there. And I think when I weighed it, it was like 17, 18 pounds.
17 or 18 pounds?
Yeah, I don't have this written down, so I don't remember exactly. But the combined weight of the weight that I had on there plus the weight of all the line that went into the hole, when I took the final, reading of line, was about 17, 18 pounds of line down there. And that's a lot. When you think about, monofilament fishing line, that stuff, when you have, like, even if you have a spool of it, it's pretty insignificant stuff. But when you got that much out there, it's going to weigh a lot.
Oh, well, sure.
And
how much? What was the final total of how much you got down there? How
oh, I got down exactly at the point that I'd given up putting line in there, and when I'd contacted you, I had 80,000 feet worth of line down in there.
80,000 feet.
80. And I don't know, that translates to like what, 15 miles worth of line?
Oh my God.
80,000 feet. And
is there any way that you could be sure? Now, eventually, did you reel all that back in again?
No. Oh, no. No, I did not bring that line back up again there.
So you never saw the lifesavers from that far down?
No. There were lifesavers at the end of it for sure, because I just let the assembly go down there. But it was only, it was just because it was already there. But I never brought it up. not 80,000 feet worth. No.
And how far down again? I'm sorry. One more time.
80,000.
80,000 feet.
Yes. That's 80 with three other zeros. 80,000 feet.
God, you must have been going out to buy fishing line.
Oh yeah. Well, I would buy it in like the. If you ever go, I don't know if you're a fisherman, Art, but
I'm not. That's why I'm struggling a little here.
If you go to a professional fishing store where fishermen buy their stuff, they sell the line in they have the line there in huge bolts. These things are like about a foot across, and they're big old things there, and they will fill each fisherman's reel from that.
I've got you.
So you
bought the whole bolt.
I would buy a bolt of line is what I did. I said, I'm going to need this much here, and I figure I'll get a good deal on the line, buy the whole darn thing. that was my way of doing that.
Were you telling anybody about this when you were doing this? I mean,
I think a couple of people knew that. When I went to buy the fishing line, I didn't tell them that I was going to, use this to measure the hole on my property, they don't really care what you're going to do with the fishing line. I mean, it's as far as they know.
Yeah, they don't care. That's
yeah,
right.
I mean, you buy fishing, fishing line there, they say, you must have a lot of reels to fill, so I think that was the thing there. So, no, I didn't have any problem with that. The only thing that really differed at that point in how I dealt with the line is that instead of, When I exhausted the two fishing poles worth of line, I hooked the line up to what is known in fishing as an outrigger, which is kind of like a short little fishing pole that you would have. It's like about a foot and a half long, and
right.
It went through that. And I could kind of swivel it over to the side if I needed to, but it didn't. I was going. It wasn't like going down to the middle of the hole. It was kind of about a foot and a half away from the side. And let it go down from there. So I would let the line go through the outrigger is basically what I did.
How could there be a hole? I mean, even if you had hit bottom at 80,000 feet, how could there be a hole?
Let's say it stopped running at 50,000 feet. I would have, if the line stopped running at 50,000 feet, and I got a reading there at 50,000 feet and it stopped.
Yeah.
I said, boy, that's a deep hole, 50,000 feet.
But 80,000 and no stop.
Yeah, it hadn't stopped at that point. Well, I...
Had anything ever come out of that hole now?
The only thing that we kind of think came out of it is some guy who had a hunting dog that passed away. The dog died. He put the dog in the hole, threw the dog in the hole. And it was the belief of several people that the dog came back from the dead.
Out of the hole?
Well, they didn't see it from the hole. They saw the dog out, around town and, in the area and stuff. And
so then you're telling me the guy threw his
dead dog
in the hole.
Dead dog
in the
hole.
The same dog was seen later around.
That's right. That's right. In fact, there was one other...
I always wondered, Mel, you once told me when you die,
yes,
you wanted to be thrown in the hole.
That was in my will, and that's how I wanted my remains to be dealt with.
Reverently dropped, I guess.
But, I was willing to take that journey. I thought it would be a great journey. I believe when I wrote to you, I said that the hole was kind of... My dogs wouldn't go anywhere near it and things like that. It kind of had a weird feeling.
Yeah, well, maybe they knew that another dog got tossed out.
Well, that could be. But there was a weird, an eerie sense about it. And, you know, I thought about that because, you know, after I talked to you, well, what was... And actually, I would get kind of a strange feeling, too, and I'm going to kind of describe the feeling to you.
All right, please.
The sensation that you got there. Have you ever been surprised by the moon? It's like you go out, you look out the window, and the moon is up there, and it's just, it's like for a second you don't realize it's the moon.
Sure.
You get that eerie sense. And then
sure.
then your brain puts together that it is the moon.
Yeah. Sure, that's happened to everybody.
You get, but that Dang. Feeling is like you got that feeling a lot around the hole there.
Oh.
You felt that feeling. It was that kind of feeling that you would have. You get that sense that you were constantly surprised by the moon during the day or during the night. It didn't matter if the moon was in, the moon was out. It didn't matter. That was the sensation. And I finally was able to nail it down. It occurred to me, and I said, that's the same feeling I used to get, you know, when I was at my property. It was that strange feeling.
Well, you said there was one other thing, too, that happened with that hole that was unusual besides the story about the dog.
There's a lot of unusual things about it. If there's a specific unusual thing that you know about it.
Well,
the one thing that it was said, are we talking about the thing where people would see, like, the dark black shaft of light coming out of it?
No, no. But tell me about that.
Well, this was something, again, that was told to me, but it was the, people said that from time to time what they would see when they would look over towards the property or if they were on my property, and looking at that way, they would see, like, a shaft of the blackest black that they'd ever seen.
Coming out of the hole?
Coming out of the hole and extending up into the sky.
Oh.
It was like just the...
That is weird.
Yeah. That is a totally... And
let me ask you this, Mel. It's a pretty wide hole, 9 feet. Could you take a real high-powered light?
Yes, I did shine lights down there, and really didn't get very far with the lights that I had.
You know, I would presume you would see the sides of the hole
I could
a while.
See that to the side, and I could see where the rock work went down several feet, ran out, and then it was the masonry work around there, where it was like dirt or rocky. Below that, but I could see that. You know, I could definitely see that far. But
I guess the light would just flat disappear.
Yeah, you just run out of light, and I'm not sure if I had one of those huge, 250,000 candle light power. I don't know how far it would have gone down.
Well, I've got a 6 million candle power light.
Yeah,
I mean, even that would just poop out.
I mean, you get those kind of things are cool to like shoot into the sky.
I rather found them useful for pointing at photographers hanging around.
Oh, those are I've had similar uses of.
Yeah, they take their video cameras and they split,
yeah,
man.
Yeah,
they hate that look like.
Especially if they have the night vision on, you know.
So then, you were so much of a believer in. I don't know, dare I say, the power of the whole?
Yeah.
That you wanted to be,
Yeah, when I died, my body was supposed to be put into the hole.
And I take it your real reason, if I were to ask you for that, is because of the dog story.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it was just such a strange thing. I have talked to people about what the hole actually is. I mean, not the people that know what it is, but,
And there are
speculated.
There are people who know what it is?
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, I cannot go to, you know, the people that had my property and say, look, why don't you just fess up there and tell me what it is? They're not going to tell me.
So, all right. What happened was that you came on my program.
Yes.
Maybe your biggest mistake.
Yes. Yes.
And told this whole story. And
innocently.
Innocently, that's right. Absolutely, yes. Innocently. And then it was like the next day or a couple of days or how long was it?
You know, I talked the day I sent you the fax. I sent the fax, and I believe you read the fax that evening. And then I went out to the property just to think, oh, good grief, I'm going to have a bunch of people down there, you know.
Yep.
And so I went out there, and then I came back home. I wasn't living at the property there because our dwelling unit there got caved in from the snowstorm there. You know, some of these little tin shacks here don't hold up too well when you got 2 feet of snow on top. So we moved, you know. I had rented an apartment in Ellensburg. And so, you know, I went back to the apartment that night, and that's when I talked to you. I don't remember.
All right. And then it was a day or two or whatever. You went back to the property.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
After the show.
What happened is that it was like the following day. I went back to my property, and I don't want to sound like I'm a lunatic here, but there was like armed people on my property. I couldn't get in. There was barricades there. There was already a whole bunch of yellow gear. Your earth moving equipment was at my property.
Oh yes.
And I was basically told that there was an airplane accident there. An airplane crashed on the property, and that I couldn't go in there. And
you told them it was your property.
Oh yeah, yes. In fact, I think they knew it was my property. I mean, I let them know this is my property. So, well, you know, we're gonna have to, you know, we have to deal with the situation. Well, I didn't see any smoke. I didn't see any evidence of a plane crash or anything. But they were not going to let me onto my property.
Yeah.
You know, so I decided, well, I'm going to go back to town. At that point, there, you know, I said, okay, this stuff is going on. And I believe I had talked to you again at that point there, and we decided.
You did. I remember you called me that night, and you said, my God, there's armed people up there,
yeah,
and they won't let me in.
That's exactly it.
Okay.
And so, again, all this time here, you know, what I have is a situation where my property was taken over, and why they were out there, how come they chose to go to my particular property that they knew was there,
there's only one answer.
Yeah.
And it's that you were on this program talking about it.
That's right. But, for someone to have that incredible level of mobilization, curiosity, wherewithal, and all these things here to deal with, you know, to deal with that. You know what I'm saying? It's like this is a big production.
Well,
they wanted this property.
Maybe a hole of this kind justifies that kind of big production. I mean, maybe there's something. I can imagine there's something really unusual, special, that
there has to have some properties that someone was highly interested in, that they thought was very valuable to have, and that they had to have. That makes sense, doesn't it?
They, to you, meaning the government.
That's right.
Were these government employees?
I think? At the property, I had both civilian and military people that were there.
Yeah, that would figure.
But I got to tell you something. I mean, I was in the Army many, many years ago, and I know what a green, uniform looks like, and the fatigues and so forth. But I got to tell you something. When I'm thinking about it there, I couldn't tell you which Army they were.
Which Army?
Yeah. I mean, all I knew is they were in military uniforms, okay?
Armed.
I couldn't tell you if they were U.S. I couldn't tell you if they were German. I couldn't tell you what they were.
Mel, did they have sidearms? Did they have...
They all had weapons. Everyone there had weapons.
As well as, like, semi-automatic weapons or automatic
weapons?
Exactly.
From what I could tell, these were... They also had fully automatic weapons.
Fully automatic weapons.
Yes.
Well, that's really intimidating. I've been in countries where I've encountered people with fully automatic weapons who frowned at me, and I didn't like it.
You went to Israel. You got used to seeing people
everywhere you go.
Everywhere
there's guns
you go.
In Israel. That's right.
You bet.
Mel, hold on. We'll
be
right
back.
This is Coast to Coast AM. get Mel from Mel's Hall of Fame. And, Mel, somebody just sent me a really interesting fax.
Okay.
Somebody named Scarlett. It says, how far is Mel's Hall from the place where Dr. Reed has had his encounter with the alien? You know, and that never hit me until I just got this fax. They are similar areas, I think.
Indeed. Not far from where my property was. Relatively speaking, is where they found Kennewick Man.
Kennewick Man, yes, right.
Mm-hmm. Along the
Columbia. That's a very unusual area up there.
I was talking with my nephew about how peculiar Ellensburg is. I mean, it's a little town, about 12,000 people, half of them college students, actually more than half of them college students. You know, so you basically got about 6,000 locals there. Yeah. Pretty small place.
All right. Let me stop you. And when you and I last spoke, your encounter with those strange folks up there, you had another encounter with them, and they made you an offer you couldn't refuse.
Yeah. Well, first they intimidated the hell out of me, because basically they said, look, you know, one of the civilian fellows there said, hey, we could find a drug lab out here, and we could put you out of business in a hurry. You know what I'm talking
that's
about.
That's right. I remember, yes.
For all intents and purposes, it sure as heck could have looked like I had a drug lab out there. I had a lot of strange non-native plants growing there. None of them, I have to say, of narcotic nature. These are just your typical desert, high desert type plants. They basically said, hey, we could shut you down and, you know, we don't have to worry about all of this. Ultimately, they did make me an offer that I could not refuse, and I will tell you the offer that they made me. And it had to do with going to Australia, and I needed money to go to Australia, and I wanted to continue my research in medicinal plants. And so we put together a very interesting package and a very interesting lease on the land to this party.
Well, as a matter of fact, did you tell me you were going to Australia? Yes, you did.
Yes.
Yeah, you told me that they had made you an offer for the land, essentially, which was going to be, if I recall correctly, leasing it
in perpetuity.
Perpetuity. In other words, forever, or for your life anyway.
That's exactly.
And so then you were off to Australia with a parcel of money.
They basically gave me $250,000 a month for the property.
$250,000 a month? My God. And so you were, and I know you were in Australia because you sent me a number of emails, which I did mention to my audience from Australia. I mean, there was no question where it was from. It was from Australia.
No, I was set up in Australia. I had I actually for a good while lived out there in Perth, which I loved living in Perth.
In Perth.
Oh, it's wonderful out there. I loved Australia.
I thought, here's Mel gone to Australia. I had no idea you were getting that much money. Obviously set for life.
I'll tell you, it was great. I built some facilities out there in the off the outback, basically, where I can grow the various plants that I was allowed to bring with me and cultivate them over there. And we also did a fair amount of wombat rescue out there, which was very gratifying. And
wombat
actually,
rescue.
Yeah, they're native marsupials out there, kind of a good-sized critter out there, but a lot of them were becoming endangered. And I can tell you this right now, the wombats now, and I do believe to some degree with the work that I'd done out there, they're making a comeback out there.
Well, that's wonderful that you've done all
that.
But Mel, what the hell happened? In other words, here you were in Australia with all this money, and now you're back here and you've fallen on hard times.
I'll tell you. I accepted their offer as I could. I was basically, I was to leave town. I left town. I was actually told to leave my car and wait at the rest stop, one of those, where you get off the road outside of Ellensburg, and I was taken to the airport and then taken to San Francisco and then taken to Australia. And so I'd left the country. I had my two dogs with me, And we,
they wanted to be damn sure you were going to Australia.
I took my dogs. I was set up there. I already had there was an account already set up for me. The complex paperwork that was involved in moving as a resident to Australia was all taken care of for me. I mean, it was a piece of cake. They'd made the arrangements, and so there was some cooperation on the Australian government's part.
Holy smokes! I know they can do this kind of thing, but I mean,
yeah,
it tells you how important this hole must be.
They were basically willing to give me $3 million a year for the use of the property, and non-disclosure on certain aspects, and I can only disclose as much as I can disclose, and there's a lot of things I don't know.
Well, listen, I can sympathize with that. Take the money and run. Hell yes.
Yeah. Hey, you know, to me it was fine. I got
the... On the one hand, you got the guys with the automatic weapons, and on the other hand, you got the guys with the money and the ticket.
Yeah. Yeah, so
Not a hard choice.
No. I 99 of 100 people in the same situation would take it. You know, I do.
And
believe.
I don't blame you for one second. And so you went to Australia.
Well, it was wonderful. I loved it. I did a lot of good work out there.
What happened? What happened, Mel? I mean,
a number of things happened there, and I'll tell you one of the things was I did continue my work with the herbs. Had some incredible successes out there with some of the things that I'd actually. I'm going to go out on a limb on this, but some of the things that I had imported from my property out there to Australia.
They usually don't like that stuff.
Pardon?
They usually don't like that stuff.
No, but we had found some of the plants that I had grown out there had some very remarkable properties, and
you think that would have anything to do with the area where they were originally?
Absolutely,
near the hole.
Absolutely, because I've had other plants there that were not native to the whole property that did not have similar results. So I know that growing in proximity of the hole, and we did a lot of cultivation there. I grew a lot of that. One of the reasons for being where I was in central Washington was the type of climate that was there was very conducive to the growing of the various things I did. I try to find similar conditions out there in Australia as well.
Yeah, but when I say, Mel, what happened? I mean, how did you go from being relatively rich and well off in Australia? Now you're back here, not well off.
I'm back here, and as you recall, I was to make an appearance on the show, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. You sent me.
I told you I was going to be in town. We got in touch, and I actually talked to you here from the States.
I promoted. I said Mel's got hold of me. He's in the States. He's going to come on the show, and then of course you were a no show.
Well, I'm going to relate to you the chain of events that occurred.
Please.
From the day that I was supposed to appear on the show,
right,
as much as I can remember, and bring it up to date till now.
All right.
Okay, on the day that I was going to be on the show, I helped my nephew move from his apartment.
Right.
We got him a place down in the Olympia area.
Right.
And so, you know, we moved him down there and all of that, and we got him down here, and then I was going to we had to return the truck back to the Tacoma area. So we got him all settled here. I got up to Tacoma, returned the truck, and I was going to take the bus down to Olympia, just take the transit. There's a bus that runs from Tacoma to Olympia. So I got on the bus and ran down there. And I got on the bus, and there was an altercation on the bus. There was fighting. There was commotion going on. Anyway, we pulled into the, and some of you listeners might actually remember this, but if they were on the bus, or they might have heard of it. But we pulled into the 512 park and ride, and some apparent transit people got on the bus, and they wanted to ask questions about what happened on the bus. I got off the bus and I said I'd talk to these guys here, but I have to get back to Olympia here because they're going to do all of this here. And so they said, that's no problem. We're going to we've got the transit bus here. We'll just take you back to Olympia.
Mm-hmm.
And I says, okay. And that's the last thing I remember.
The last thing you remember?
About,
what do you mean?
Was it about 12 days later, I found myself in San Francisco.
Somebody hit you? Did what did you? Give
I have
you a
no idea at that point. I found myself in San Francisco in a pretty rough part of town, in an alley. These bums were basically trying to wake me up.
Holy mackerel!
They were trying to get me to sing. I remember this. They were trying to get me to sing On the Road Again because I sort of looked like Willie Nelson.
Huh.
And,
Mel, are you sure?
This is exactly what happened.
And you lost how many days?
12 days.
From an altercation on a bus.
That's, I was told that they wanted to talk to me about it, and they were willing to, take me back to Olympia from there. So, you know, I got onto the, little transit van. That's the last thing I remember.
So 12 days gone when you, God knows what, were knocked out or kept in some kind of coma or...
When I woke up there, you know, I had nothing on me. I had no identification. I had no wallet. I had no keys. I had the clothes I had when I was, you know, moving. They were still as grubby and filthy as, you know, after you move, you get all grubby and filthy.
Yeah.
I was in my clothes. I oriented myself down there. I looked around. I noticed there was pain in my arm. I rolled up my sleeve. It looked like, I'm looking at my elbow now here. It looked like, what would you say, an IV was taped to my skin?
Yeah.
There was still the residue of tape
on
my
man.
Arms.
Yeah, I understand. So, obviously, somebody kept you out for 12 days for some reason.
You listened to the first part of your show, and, you know, you're talking about teeth.
Yeah.
All of my back teeth have been removed.
What?
I have no back teeth.
You have no back teeth?
None.
You don't mean like...
No molars, no wisdom teeth.
You're not talking about wisdom teeth. You're talking about...
None. No back teeth. Not on top, not on bottom.
Why would they take your teeth out?
I have no idea, Art. The next thing I had, I got in touch with my nephew. I said, look, I'm down here. He gets me a Greyhound ticket to pick up at the bus station over there. I get on the bus.
You were broke?
I had nothing.
Nothing?
I had nothing. You know, I mean, that was it. I had no, you know, he gets me on the bus. I take the bus back. You know, and, you know, he told me he was just absolutely frantic, you know, because I'd called him collect from down there.
And I was frantic, too. I couldn't figure out what happened to you.
So what happened is there I am, you know, looked like something had occurred to me there. I had no teeth there. I have no idea why I have no teeth in the back. I have front teeth.
Well, were there scars where your teeth had been, in other words, if there had been recent surgery or...
Oh, yeah. I mean, in fact, at the time there, I was still bleeding from the back of the mouth. I mean, I could still taste blood in the back of my mouth there, so it was pretty ugly.
Boy, you were screwing with somebody you shouldn't have been screwing with.
Well, you know, I would think that the easy answer would be is that it had something to do with I'm going to get on the air and, you know, blah 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 and say this and that.
In other words, since I had promoted the show.
Yeah, but that's really not it.
If that is it, then you could be in danger now.
Well, I don't believe that was it because, you know, there's a lot of things that I was doing. I kind of got myself in trouble.
Yeah, but Mel, if you think about the fact that look what happened after the first time you came on my show.
Yeah.
Then look what happened after I promoted years later that you were going to be on my show again.
Yeah.
And you're gone for 12 days.
Mm-hmm.
You have to imagine there's a possibility of a relationship there.
We could take the connection and we could put it on the back burner, but I'm a curious fellow. I mean, any guy that runs 80,000 feet of line into a hole,
he's a curious guy. Yeah,
a curious guy. you know, I got back to my nephews, and I'm still with my nephew now.
Don't even say where.
No, but I found out that, and I don't know if you can appreciate this or that, but the next thing that happened to me is that I found that there was some legal action taken against me.
Legal action?
And the legal action was taken on behalf of my former wife.
Your former wife?
Yeah. Basically, I had the property on the Manassas Stash.
You had said it was her property.
It was her property, and it was basically she had leased it to me in perpetuity as part of our divorce settlement. I had helped her go through school.
All right, Mel.
Yeah.
Hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. Oh, it just gets worse and worse. And a kid without a cent. Hope she didn't do that to him. Oh, man. We'll be right back. America, 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 America,
America, America. I was without my belt buckle, and that really, you know.
They took your belt buckle?
Yeah, I had made.
Now, that's really low.
Well, I had made a.
Take a person's teeth, but you take their belt buckle.
Well, it was. It was just, you know, I had everything else, and I there was another belt buckle on there. It was dope, but I'd made a belt buckle out of a silver fork, eating fork.
Yeah.
And bent it. I used to bend metal and do all kinds of things with it, and fashioned a nice belt buckle out of that, and...
That was gone.
And I used to tumble stones and stuff, too, and I just had nice-looking rock that I had on there, too, that, it, you know, I picked up and put on there, and it was... It was like, you know, I had my pants, I had my shoes, I had my socks, and, you know, why take my belt buckle? But that's, might be getting ahead of myself here. But anyway, I get back and find out that there was some legal action taken against me here, and it was initiated by my former wife. And
I see.
Basically, I had the property through part of the divorce settlement there, and, you know, I helped her with her school, and it was pretty worthless land, and she said, well... You know, I'll give you that as part of the settlement there, and, you know, I mean, I wasn't
So
really...
then what was the legal action? She wanted the whole back?
Well, what happened was that the papers I was served with said that I was in violation of the terms of the lease with her.
With her?
Exactly. You know, as part of the divorce settlement, and the number of things that occurred at my property, one, that there were underground fuel tanks put in. Number two, there was a septic system put in. And
oh, this
three,
is what the people who came up there put in.
Number three, there was some paving of roads, and these were all things that were not supposed to occur on the property.
Gotcha.
And so basically, I had lost all rights to the property out there, period. The sad thing about it was I was giving my former wife, because we kind of had an agreement there that if I were to profit from the property, I would, you know, take care of her. We had, you know, we didn't have enough there to keep a marriage going, but, you know, certainly didn't have anything against her. I was giving her $25,000 a month.
Oh, it's pretty generous.
Yeah, I would
think
say
that would keep her. Well, she must have smelled the color of the money.
Someone,
I mean.
Basically, I figured
she must have known if you were giving her $25,000, there was a lot more.
Well, someone
in that hole.
But I mean, there's no way that she would have had access to the property, as far as I can tell, and someone had to get to her.
Well, yeah, but if she's got control of the property now, then she's probably made a deal.
She's dealing with them, yes.
With them.
Mm-hmm.
And you're out in the cold, and you get left with the bums in San Francisco and no back teeth.
I'm down there in a really ugly part of town. I got to tell you, there I don't have any back teeth. I don't even have my belt buckle. And you know, right now I'm at the point there where I'm actually, you know, I don't know. You could probably tell I'm a smoker, but I'm actually having to sell plasma in order to buy cigarettes. That's how bad I am right now.
Oh my God! Talk about a riches to rags story.
I mean, we're talking, you know, all the way around there.
Well, and still you're pursuing this, Mel. I don't want to name these people. You know, you've got some names here.
Yeah.
And I don't want to name them on the air, because I just want to be careful here. But
okay.
You want to find, for example, the Mexican fellow who used to throw
the tire guy.
Why do you want him? A Catholic priest you're looking for.
That's right. There's a Hungarian fellow that I need to get in touch with.
People who have something to do with the hole. My question is, after all of this, Mel, what do you think you can do?
Well, you know, maybe I should run this back to my time in Australia, okay?
All right.
And, you know, I did bring some of the various plants that we'd grown in on the property by the hole there. And it was just various plants. If anyone wants to, they could probably do a little research and find out exactly which plants they are, because the plants themselves have been written about for the last 100 years. And they had remarkable properties. Pardon?
Like what?
Well, I'm not going to say the names of the plants there.
No. Properties, remarkable.
Oh, they were used, for instance, during by a certain army doctor for dealing with the great influenza that we had at the turn of the century, the one that killed all those people.
Yes, millions.
Yes, and the people that received this it was a Indian concoction. We're just fine, and no problems whatsoever.
But, I mean, you have been, pardon the pun, kicked in the teeth over this now.
Yes.
And so why do you want to keep pursuing it? I mean, if you keep going after this...
It doesn't matter at this point in a lot of ways. I'm 68 years old.
Yes, sir.
Or I will be 68 in June. I don't, you know, I mean, I had a simple life before this. I had, you know, I had an extraordinary run for the last several years. And I still need to get some answers for things. I need to get hold of the guy that I gave the gun to. I believe he contacted your show.
Where did you get that gun?
That I dug up on the property. I planted various things out there. And from time to time, you know, when I'm clearing a piece of land to plant on, you know, I'll dig up rocks and I'll dig up metal and all kinds of things there. And I found this...
A gun
and a holster and those little odds and ends along with it there. And I just basically took this and threw it in my drawer in my little workshop there, my office that I had on property there. And then when I had to move, I gave it to this fellow and... because I need to move into the apartment, I gave it to him as a deposit on the apartment.
You know, so it must have been a decent gun.
It was, from what I could tell, and I'm not a big gun man, but it was a German P-38. It looked like one of those, you know, like the Nazis used to use back in World War II.
Yeah, you might have really had something on your hands there, and you gave it to the guy.
Yeah, well, again, I'm not a gun person. I figure I might be worth something. I don't know. It didn't make any
sense. Why do you think getting hold of him now would be meaningful?
Well, for one, is we can't get hold of him. And two, for some of the things that I remember about the gun now and that I also found out and also what he had indicated to you about the gun as well. And what I had found out, and I talked with his son is basically says that this fellow is, he left the family, he left his wife, he left, you know, everyone there. He can't be found at all, and so I'd like him to contact me.
So he's disappeared, too.
And he had the gun that I gave him there, and it was found on the property.
And suppose you found the Mexican guy who threw down all the tires, thousands of tires. What would you do with him?
Well, part of this is also connected with the gun, so I'm going to tell you a little bit more about this here and what I found out about it, and I might be able to verify it with some of my own experience.
Fire away.
I had talked with this guy's son, and this guy said that, you know, his father kind of became obsessed with this gun here, and I believe what he'd indicated to you is that he would shoot this gun and it wouldn't make a sound.
Yeah, I remember that. That's a long time ago now.
Yes. Well, I knew exactly who it was. I'm here to tell you the guy is, you know, speaking the gospel there when he contacted you. But this thing was like dead silent and was really weird. Well, I talked to this guy's son because he's kind of close with my nephew, and we got talking. He says, you know what was interesting about this? I don't know what my dad told me, and you know when, you know, we were talking about it, and he kind of demonstrated for him. Is that he would set the gun down, like near the radio, and it would pick up signals from all over the place, like from the past, from the present, from any type of radio signals, and you could change the channels on the radio.
This is really weird, Mel.
Look, this
everything that comes
you
out of the area of that hole is weird.
Well, this is what I'm telling you here, is that he would do that if he would just like about a foot away from the, wave his hand near the gun.
Yeah.
The channels would change there, and he would get something like a baseball game from 1963, or it would be a weather report from Iowa, or it would be something from Canada, or it would be Mexican music playing. But if he was very still, it would stay exactly on a certain channel there, and he would get something like Out of Time with it.
That's weird.
Okay?
That's really weird.
And so that
Well, now I see why you want to find the gun.
Well, I'd like to find him. I'd like to find out that he's okay and that, you know, he hasn't done anything really peculiar or very strange.
Maybe it's true that everybody who in any way encountered the hole in the area came to problems.
Well, the guy with the tires, I want to get in touch with him because I had given his, it must have been a son or it must have been a grandson of his, he once drove the truck out there and he had some problems on the property and his son drove out there after him to help him with the truck and, you know, get him going there. And he had trouble there too. To make a long story short, I gave him a couple of buckets of, 5-gallon paint buckets full of, like, rocks and metal and stuff that I'd picked up on the property.
Yeah.
That I was, instead of chucking them aside, I would just toss them in these buckets and occasionally I'd sort through them and see what's going on. But I gave it to him.
Right.
To put in the back of his car so he can get out of there because he wasn't getting any traction. So, you know, normally, you know, out there when you're in that part of the country, you always carry a couple of bags of sand or something in the back of your vehicle.
Sure,
traction.
Sure.
So he has a couple of buckets of rocks and possibly dirt and stuff that I want to get on my hand.
So you think then that anything that came from that area has unusual properties?
I'm beginning to believe that. I'm beginning to believe that. And if we reel this story up to Australia, is that I was approached when I was in Australia because I was dealing with some people in the various ministries there, the government things, the ministries of health and different things there, and they were kind of interested in what I was doing. And I was approached at one point to take some of the things that I had brought from the U.S., and we gave them to some people up there, three men, who had, like, advanced HIV.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys were in hospice.
Yeah.
Well, they're not in the hospice anymore. They're not on death's door anymore. These guys are doing just fine.
Wow.
This was stuff
this
that
is
we
some
grown.
Story. And, Mel, why did you... I don't understand why you left Australia. I mean,
I just came back here to... be with my family and, what family I have here. And
obviously a big mistake.
Back in the U.S. here, that was my primary reason for coming up here.
But if you had stayed there, you might still be sipping pina coladas and stuff.
Well, you know, I do wish I was there. I gotta tell you on the beaches in Australia, the women there wear barely more than two Band-Aids and a postage stamp.
I've heard that, Mel.
Yeah, I mean, it's gorgeous. More ways than one out there. I
so the money's
that.
Gone, the postage stamp
no
girls
money.
Are gone, the
postage,
teeth are gone,
yes.
The belt buckle's gone.
Belt buckle's gone.
Gun's gone.
I'm trying to get hold of a few people. The Hungarian man, he lived in the area, and actually, I have a lot of interest in getting to him. The priest fellow, same thing. He's kind of connected to the Hungarian fellow.
Mel, you know, I'm going to make a suggestion to you.
Yeah.
Maybe you should do what a lot of people do, and you should write a book about this. Have you considered it?
I don't know. I mean, that's my nephew was you know, writing something based on me. You know, just he just thought it was great. You know, he says, "Oh, I know this celebrity kind of guy here."
People wrote songs about what happened to you.
Oh, I know. My nephew just showed me the other day. He had a compact disc called The Ballad of Mel's Hole. Incredible. People told me they had drinks named after all of this. And
Mel's Hole drinks?
Yeah, you know, in the various bars in town in Ellensburg, and quite a remarkable phenomenon out there.
Huh.
It was really amazing. It really created quite a stir out in that part of the country.
Well, you know, have you tried? This is a key question. Have you tried to go back to the hole? Or the property where the hole is?
No.
I can't say as I blame you, really.
Right now, I'm keeping some of my cards close to the vest because I'd like to put some of the screws on my former wife there to see that, hey, you know, let her know, and I hope she's listening, hey, you know what happened to me?
Can it happen to you?
Can happen to you, and it might be worth your while to keep me a little bit quiet about things. You know,
say $25,000.
Now I'm happy for an acre or two of land and a trailer I can call my own. You know, where I can keep doing my work.
Well, this is some odyssey. This is something you've been through, Mel.
Mm-hmm.
All over us. Well, I was going to say stinging hole. It's not a stinging hole. It's a unusual hole.
Yeah, basically it's a hole, but I really did get the shaft in the end here.
That is, it's not funny.
Truth.
Sorry.
It has been a remarkable thing. I don't know. Did you read the facts that I sent you?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, did you read it to the audience or?
Oh no,
okay.
Because there were names in it. I didn't want to. You know.
Is there anything in there you wouldn't want me to talk about on the air?
Only the names.
No specific names?
No specific names.
Specific incidents?
Well, we've covered a lot of that.
Okay. Can I say this? There is a very, very, very strong connection with the Heaven's Gate incident and my property?
Well, okay, I will say this. You wanted to make contact with anyone who saw Marshall Applewhite
mm-hmm.
up in that Ellensburg area
yes.
prior to the last appearance on Coast to Coast. And by the way, Mel, for your original appearance here was, damn, I had it here.
In February of 97.
I think it was February 21st of
mm-hmm.
1997.
Mm-hmm.
I got a call from my board op during the break here. And he said February 1st, 1997.
Absolutely.
And so you think somehow, there's some connection to the whole Heaven's Gate thing?
I do believe, and that happened, that occurred, as you recall, about a month after my appearance.
I recall, yeah, well, I recall. All right.
On the show, and I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
Well, there's no way for people to get hold of you, is there? Nothing that you can give out?
I will give out an email address if anybody wants to get in touch with
really?
Me. Yes.
Okay, buddy, go for it.
Okay, Mel Waters.
Mel Waters.
One word, run it together, @home.com.
Mel Waters. At whole?
Home, H-O-M-E.
At home.
No, I don't have a domain name for...
So that's M-E-L-W-A-T-E-R-S, @home, H-O-M-E, .com.
.com.
Well, you're going to get a lot of email, Mel,
I really want to know if something... If that priest will contact me. I want anyone that knows...
Any of the people from back then that had to do with you and the hole.
That's right. The Hungarian man, I'm very, very, very anxious to get hold of, and I do believe he would get in touch with me.
Well, Mel, I'm so sorry all this has happened to you. We're running out of time here, but I'm you will never know how sorry I am that all this has happened to you. And
I'm gonna move along here. You know, it's
will prevail.
And who knows? You may not have heard the last of all of this.
Oh, listen.
And if my wife is listening, ex-wife is listening, hey, you owe me.
All right, that's Mel Waters at home, HOME.com. You'll probably hear from the media, too. Listen, buddy, hold
put
on.
Put on your website there. I want those people to get hold of me.
Hold on to your front teeth, Mel.
Thank you.
Later, buddy.
Bye.